Sony makes cuts in production and jobs. Airline capacity cuts, they're not just for the U.S. anymore. And as of April, airline employment was still up. This is Aero News. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for downloading this AeroCast. Here's what's up in aviation for Wednesday, June 18th, 2008. Mooney Airplane Company announced on Tuesday morning it has slowed production from 8 planes per month to 5 for the rest of 2008. CEO Dennis Ferguson announced, quote, "While this action will allow us to better control inventory and reduce production costs, it will have an impact on our workforce. Effective Tuesday, we will reduce our employment by approximately 80 people. In order to assist the affected employees, we will provide a severance package and career transition support," unquote. The General Aviation Manufacturers Association reports piston engine aircraft deliveries are down 28% for the first quarter of 2008, and piston planes is all Mooney makes. Ferguson added the company is increasing marketing efforts in overseas markets that are experiencing growth. Quote, "Since 1946, the story of Mooney has been one of constant innovation, industry leadership, and the passion for flight. Our commitment is to continue the Mooney story," unquote. The Canadian press reports Air Canada plans to cut up to 2,000 jobs by the end of this year, slashing capacity to cope with the slumping economy and record high fuel costs. CEO Monty Brewer said on Tuesday, quote, "The loss of jobs is painful in view of our employees' hard work in bringing the airline back to profitability over the past 4 years. If fuel prices remain at current levels, we can anticipate further capacity reductions," unquote. Air Canada says it's targeting a 2% cut in domestic capacity by the first quarter of 2009. International routes will be cut 7%, U.S. trans-border capacity by 13%. Every time the price of oil increases by a dollar a barrel, Air Canada's annual costs rise $26 million. The company says fuel costs now make up 30% of overall expenses. Not helping matters are federal and provincial fuel excise taxes, security fees, and airport charges, which Air Canada says are among the most expensive in the world. On the same day Air Canada announced its plans, the Chicago Tribune reported overseas airlines, including Qantas, Cathay Pacific, and low-cost Ryanair, are now looking to park planes or reduce orders for new ones. Of even greater concern to airlines and potentially to plane makers Boeing and Airbus are signs that record passenger growth is cooling in the Middle East, India, and China. Manufacturers have been counting on those regions to keep record sales going as the U.S. economy slumps. More encouraging for Boeing and Airbus is a report by analyst Paul Nisbet, who says even if growth does slow down in the Mideast and Asia, it should still be healthy, just not at the breakneck pace seen in recent years. The analyst also notes most foreign airlines have their fuel costs hedged, and even if they haven't done that, they're at least not paying for their fuel in shrinking U.S. dollars. Most of the cuts announced in the U.S. airline industry won't take effect until after the summer travel season ends, so it's going to take this next set of numbers a while to catch up. The U.S. Department of Transportation's Bureau of Transportation Statistics reported Tuesday that U.S. scheduled passenger airlines employed 1% more workers in April 2008 than they did in April 2007. That makes the 15th consecutive year-to-year monthly increase, but the smallest increase since March of 2007. The seven network carriers employed 283,684 full-time equivalents in April, 68.5% of the domestic passenger airline total. Low-cost carriers employed 14.8% and regional carriers 14.5%. A full-time equivalent could be a full-time employee or two part-timers. All the network carriers except American increased FTEs from April to April. American's decline was only 0.2%. You'll find more details on the report at aero-news.net. Up next on ANN, NATCA says it won't wait any longer for the FAA to deal with controller fatigue. A Florida pilot dies after making sure his passenger jumps to safety. And NASA plans repairs to Launch Pad 39A. You're listening to Aero News.
At Cirrus Design, we don't ignore the fundamentals of aviation design. We just give them an ingenious new interpretation. For 3 years running, the Cirrus SR-22 G2 has been the world's best-selling single-engine four-seat airplane. Today, the SR-22 G2 defines the new Cirrus standard model. Why? We'd love to invite you to see for yourself by taking a ride in the new breed of airplane that has taken the aviation industry by storm. To learn more, call 888-750-9927 or on the web at cirrusdesign.com. Finally, aviation headsets have evolved. Clarity Aloft is the next generation of headset design for a number of reasons. For instance, the noise-canceling microphone used in the Clarity Aloft headset is a high-fidelity, noise-canceling electret condenser microphone with performance optimized for speech frequencies in extremely high-noise environments. Stage performers and musicians use this same microphone because they must insist on the highest level of sound reproduction. For more information, call 612-747-3197 or check out the innovative Clarity Aloft headset on the web at clarityaloft.com.
We're back with more of your Aero Briefing for June 18th, 2008. I'm Paul Plack. In April 2007, the National Transportation Safety Board recommended the FAA work with its air traffic controllers to find answers to the causes of controller fatigue. On Monday, the National Air Traffic Controllers Association announced that since more than a year has gone by with no FAA action, the union will develop its own fatigue management system. NATCA President Patrick Forey adds the union is also participating in the FAA's Aviation Fatigue Management Symposium this week, despite it being, quote, nothing more than another FAA publicity stunt designed to show an appearance of concern for this issue, unquote. Forey continued, quote, in fact, the agency has contributed to the fatigue problem by worsening the controller staffing crisis and imposing work rules on controllers in September 2006 that mandated longer work periods and fewer rest opportunities and even prohibited controllers from calling in sick due to fatigue, unquote. Forey concluded, quote, the FAA holding a symposium on fatigue is like the big oil companies holding a symposium on high gas prices, unquote. You know, that's not a bad line. The pilot of an experimental Acroduster SA-750 biplane was killed Monday afternoon in Florida, but not before ordering his passenger to parachute to safety before impact. According to WMBB Television News, the two-seat aerobatic plane crashed shortly after takeoff from Panama City Bay County International Airport about 1 p.m. Eastern Time. 48-year-old Craig Ellis said the pilot, 31-year-old Kevin Gorham, told him to jump when the plane began experiencing problems. Ellis told local media they had just come out of maneuvering flight when the trouble began. Ellis landed safely, cut himself free of his chute, and called 911. Gorham rode the plane down into a heavily wooded area in Northern Bay County. Gorham was an instructor with Precision Avjet, a family-owned FBO based at Panama City. A visibly shaken Ellis credited the pilot with saving his life Monday at the expense of his own. The FAA and NTSB will investigate. NASA officials allowed journalists to inspect damage to Launch Pad 39A at the Kennedy Space Center on Monday, 2 weeks after the launch of Space Shuttle Discovery caused over 5,000 heat-resistant bricks to break off a flame-retardant wall. The Associated Press reports the scene resembled the aftermath of a volcanic eruption. Cleanup efforts have reportedly stalled due to traces of asbestos found in the bricks. The flame trench was installed when Pad 39A was constructed by the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers in the 1960s and was used for the Apollo moon missions. NASA said it appears that some of the bricks weren't applied properly at that time, allowing gaps between the bricks and the adhesive to form and widen over the years. Before Discovery's June 2nd launch, the worst damage to the pad had occurred during the doomed 1986 launch of the Shuttle Challenger, when about 800 bricks were lost. NASA is optimistic the pad will be repaired in time for the early October launch of the Shuttle Atlantis. Senior managers will meet next week to discuss options. The most likely repair method now would use a steel mesh to cover roughly 75 feet by 20 feet where the brick separated. A heat-resistant coating would then be applied over that mesh. That would be quicker than forming and installing new bricks. NASA is also inspecting the adjacent Pad 39B to determine whether its flame trench has similar flaws. An emergency landing by a Cessna 150 on Interstate 95 gave lunchtime commuters near Ormond Beach, Florida, something to talk about on Tuesday. According to the Daytona Beach News Journal, the Volusia County Sheriff's Office received a call about a plane in distress from the Ormond Beach Airport Control Tower at 11:47 a.m. local time. By that point, the two-seat trainer had already landed on I-95, just north of U.S. Highway 1. No damage or injuries were reported. Authorities said the plane's pilot, Eric McRee, was on a training flight with his instructor when the aircraft experienced engine trouble on its way from Ormond Beach to Flagler County Airport in Bunnell. The emergency landing briefly shut down southbound I-95, but the lanes were reopened after the plane was moved to the median. After engine repairs, authorities briefly shut down the lanes once again just after 3 p.m. so the pilot could take off. Still ahead, two Able Flight scholarship winners will barnstorm to Oshkosh. United Flights will soon have iPod jacks. And four UFOs attack a MiG-21. You're listening to Aero News.
Remember what the future used to look like? The flying cars, the spaceports, the rocket packs and spandex outfits. That was some future, wasn't it? But hey, here's the real future. A Garmin Wass Navigator. It makes its own glide path out of GPS signals, so you can land IFR at thousands of airports with no ILS or other ground-based approach aids. Now that's a future you can believe in. Garmin Wass GPS. Follow the leader.
Uncramp your style in a new Citation CJ2 Plus from Cessna. Now with integrated ProLine 21 avionics, FADEC, and a restyled cockpit and cabin. In the CJ2 Plus, you'll carry more payload than you could in the original CJ2. You'll climb and cruise faster. You'll have the freedom to use even shorter runways. And you'll do it all on less fuel. For a sure thing, call 1-800-4-CESSNA.
We're back to wrap up your Aero Briefing for Wednesday, June 18th, 2008. I'm Paul Plack. In 2007, Brad Jones and Sean O'Donnell became the first Able Flight scholarship winners to earn their sport pilot certificates. Beginning July 21st in Atlanta, they'll barnstorm their way to Oshkosh. Both Brad and Sean use wheelchairs due to spinal cord injuries suffered in vehicle accidents. They'll be flying a matched set of specially adapted Sky Aero 600 LSAs. That's a unique aircraft that can be flown with a second set of hand controls. The two pilots plan to depart Cobb County Airport north of Atlanta July 21st for their first stop in Knoxville, Tennessee later that morning. On the 22nd, they'll stop in Dayton, the 23rd in Indianapolis, the 24th in Champaign, and the 25th in Waukesha, Wisconsin, just west of Milwaukee. Then, on the morning of July 28th, Brad and Sean will fly the last leg into Oshkosh for an arrival ceremony in Aero Shell Square on the opening day of AirVenture. In airport events at each location, both men will meet with current and former patients of spinal rehabilitation hospitals and organizations that serve wounded and disabled veterans. Local pilot groups and media are also being invited. Charles Stites of Able Flight observes, quote, "It's one thing to read about a person with a disability becoming a pilot, and it's quite another to hear from them in person how they have overcome traditional barriers and successfully faced the challenges of learning to fly. Along with every other scholarship winner, Brad and Sean have proven that with hard work and dedication, nothing is insurmountable, not even flight," unquote. The tour is being funded in part by the Wolf Aviation Fund, and the aircraft have been made available by Hansen Air Group and Philly Sport Pilot, companies that provide training for Able Flight scholarship winners. To help fund the tour and its general scholarship fund, Able Flight is seeking pledges for either Brad or Sean. Based on Able Flight's Nickel a Nautical Mile campaign, donors are encouraged to make a $50 pledge for the 1,000-mile trip. United Airlines introduced a new feature on Tuesday. The Chicago-based carrier hopes iPod and iPhone connectivity to its in-flight entertainment systems will ease passenger frustrations. It works the same way as in some newer cars. You can play your own content on 15.4-inch personal television while your iPod or iPhone charges. As you might expect, the feature won't immediately be available to the cattle back in coach. International flyers in first class and business class seats will get it first. Technology for the connectivity was developed by Panasonic Avionics Corporation. Officials in the Romanian Defense Ministry announced recently that one of their MiG-21s was struck by several UFOs last October. UPI reports at least four objects struck the MiG-21 Lancer during an October 31st checkout flight, but the plane was able to land safely. Yeah, that's right. It happened on Halloween. According to the India Times, the objects hit the plane at about 20,000 feet below an overcast cloud layer. The man tasked with investigating the incident, Lieutenant Colonel Nikolai Grigori, claims a video camera on board the aircraft caught two solid bodies which are not translucent as they hit the fighter. Quote, "They couldn't be birds because there are no birds in Europe able to fly so high. They couldn't be ice bodies because it was a clear sky. Neither could they be pieces of another plane or a meteor. We can say with certainty what it was not, but not what it was. An object that struck the MiG, but we do not know what material it was or origin," unquote. And finally, screeners with the Transportation Security Administration are about to receive spiffy, more authoritative uniforms, which include 2x3-inch silver-colored badges. Real law enforcement officials are not amused. Dwayne McGray of the Airport Law Enforcement Agency's network told USA Today, quote, "It's another way of saying you're not important," unquote. Airport police worry their authority will be undercut by TSA personnel who look like cops, or that passengers will approach screeners to report crimes instead of real police officers. Ironically, respect for the TSA screeners was part of the uniform change. TSA spokeswoman Ellen Howe said, "Screeners need to convey an image of authority to passengers. In some extreme cases," she said, "disgruntled passengers have harassed and even punched screeners." To be fair, several agencies not involved in law enforcement already use badges, including 250 EPA workers who oversee oil spill cleanups. Boston screener A.J. Castilla tells the paper he's eager to get a badge. Quote, "It'll go a long way to enhance the respect of this workforce," unquote. Aw, A.J., come on. You don't need a badge for that. Just stop laughing when I walk through the new full-body scanner and try not to drop my laptop next time. That's the latest from Aero News. Remember to check out the ANN special feature. Today, my guests are Stu and Kathy Fields, publishers and editors of Experimental Hilo magazine. They'll talk about how they got interested in home-built choppers and about their unique publication. And if you haven't done it yet, subscribe to our AeroCasts. Find them on iTunes, Yahoo, Odeo, and at our website, www.aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.